Beruchim Abayim, ladies. We are studying Parashat Noah. For those that lost track, the second Parashat in the Sefer Torah, Parashat Noah. There's a very famous midrash. It's actually an argument amongst our rabbis, or at least it seems like an argument. The pasuk says, Noah is Sadiq. Noah was a righteous man. He was tamim. He was perfect. His belief in God was complete. Bedorotav, in his generations. So all the rabbis try to understand, what does it mean in his generations? Isn't it obvious? He lived when he lived. Does the Torah have to tell me he was a good man in his generation? Well, obviously he wasn't a good man in the 10 generations before him, because he wasn't alive and he wasn't after. So it's obvious. So the Midrash says there's two opinions. One opinion says, yeah, in his generation he was a good man. But had he been in the generation of Avraham, he wouldn't have been so great. Meaning in his generation, that maybe there wasn't so many good people, so Noah stood out. But put him up against Avraham Avinu in a different generation, Noah is not so good. So the pasuk says, yeah, in his generation, but in somebody else's generation, maybe not. And the other opinion says, no. If you'd put Noah in another generation of Sadiqim, all the more so he would have been better. If he was able to maintain goodness in a generation of bad people, so certainly if you put him in a generation of good people, certainly he would have rose to the occasion and become great. So I heard a nice explanation in the name of the Chazon Ish. He wants to say that they're not arguing these two opinions. And what the Midrash and the Hachamim is saying is like this. 100%, if Noah would be in a different generation of Sadiqim, he definitely would have been even greater. That's clear. Because if he was able to withstand the social pressures of his time, which was a negative society, all the more so he could have been much greater in another generation of Sadiqim. But everybody agrees, if he was in the generation of Avraham, that specific generation, Noah compared to Avraham was not great. Maybe compared to other Sadiqim, he's considered great. But if you compare it specifically to Avraham, he wasn't. The question is why? Why does everybody agree that Avraham is miles ahead of Noah? What was so special about Avraham, or the quality that he had that Noah did not? I don't know if you know this, but Hachamim have a claim against Noah. One of the claims they have against Noah is, God told you he's destroying the world. What did you do about it, Noah? Did you go around and warn anybody? Did you go around and make speeches? Did you go around maybe, to alarm everybody? Rabotai, I had a prophecy, it's going to happen, there's going to be a flood. Did Noah go to God and say, please, Borei Olam, you can't do this. Give them a second chance. You got to save the world. It's too cruel, please. Don't say anywhere that Noah prayed for the generation that he was in, nor does it say anywhere that he went out and tried to change their opinion to make them better. It's almost as if to say, God told Noah, I'm going to destroy the world, I'm going to save you. And Noah said, okay, good, I'm good. Me, who else? You, your wife, your kids, the immediate family, I'm good. Everybody else, what are you going to do? Now, the claim is bad, because Avraham was the exact opposite. When God told Avraham that he was going to destroy the city of Sedom, which is one city, it's not the whole world, and it's a city of derelicts, it's a city of Reshaim on the highest level. And what does Avraham Avinu do? he beseeches God, maybe there's 50 tzaddikim, maybe there's 45, you can't do it, please, Borei Olam, give them a second chance. So you see a major, major distinction between the attitudes of Avraham and Noah. Avraham was more concerned about saving the people, while Noah, and again we say this with the utmost respect, Noah was a great man, but again in comparison to Avraham, he fell short from his responsibility towards the generation. As a matter of fact, the Midrash writes that when Noah got off the Teva, he started crying. If he saw what happened, he saw the world was really destroyed. There was nothing left. He was starting from scratch again. So Noah started to cry. So the rabbis say, hey, Noah, you cried too late. Now you cried. You should have cried before the Mabul. You should have cried before this happened over here. So as great as Noah was, he fell short from his responsibility. And the rabbis even say, if you want to read the Pesukim, it says, Noah ish tzaddik tamim haya bedorotav. So I heard one rabbi explain, the people in Noah's generation also looked at Noah favorably. They said, this guy's a tzaddik. Bedorotav in his generation, meaning his people, the people of his time also looked at him as a tzaddik. You know why? Because et ha-Elohim hitalech Noah. Because Noah was a religious man and he served God. And that's why the people liked him. Because Noah didn't bother them. Which means they respected Noah. He's a guy who sits all day long and learns Torah. Never tells us what to do. Never criticizes us. Never rebukes us. Never tells us, bad news. So Noah was ish tzaddik bedorotav. He was accepted in his generation. Because why? Because he wasn't with the people. He was with God all day long. So everybody likes a rabbi like that. A rabbi that lets you live and lets you do what you want to do, of course. They'll go kiss his hand, agam, give me beracha. They'll give him charity. What the best rabbi, the best rabbi, the best rabbi. Because it doesn't bother anybody. The community's in shambles. Things are happening. People are doing what they want to do. And agam sitting reading Torah. So unfortunately, that's the impression that we get of Noah. And that's why God, maybe, told Noah to build a Teba. God could have saved Noah in many ways. The Teba was a massive, massive construction project. I mean, it was the size of a football field. Very long. I mean, it's 100 yards long. And it's high, and you have to make floors. And it's not an easy thing to construct. The Gemara tells us it took Noah 120 years to build it. Take the biggest house that we build in our community. It doesn't take 120 years. And Noah stayed about 120 years. So the rabbis say, why? Why put Noah through this? You know, God could have saved Noah and just, put him somewhere else in the world, like in a spot that there won't be any flood. Let him live on an island somewhere for a year till the whole world gets destroyed. And then, you bring him back. So they explain is God wanted Noah to get involved with the people. So he said, the only way Noah's going to get involved with the I got to make him do something in public. So what was Noah doing? He's building. They see him building a structure, things gigantic. So what happens? The people come to Noah. Noah, what in the world are you building over here? What kind of item is this? So now Noah was forced to start a dialogue with the people. Well, I'm building a teba. Building a teba? Were you planning on going anywhere? Where are you going? So no, I'm not going anywhere. But God told me that in 120 years from now, you don't make the issue about it, the world's going to be destroyed. What are you talking? But now at least God, through telling Noah to build a teva, he aroused interest amongst the people and he forced Noah now to at least communicate with them and discuss it with them to try. So it's almost a punishment to Noah because he didn't pray for them, because he didn't go out on his own. So God says, as if to know you're punished. Now you're going to have to build this thing for 120 years. Maybe then you'll be able to fulfill some outreach with the people. And then he tells him to go on the Teba, and he lived in a zoo practically, the worst than a zoo. Every single animal that we see in the world today, which is actually millions of animals, there's different creatures and species, they were all on the Teba.
They had to be on the Teba. If it wasn't on the Teba, then they can't be around today. The rabbis point out it was a miracle. Physically, it's impossible to fit what Noah fit on the Teba. But bottom line, what was Noah doing the whole time on the Teba? He was a zookeeper. He was feeding the animals the whole time. Every animal has a different diet. Every animal has a different eating schedule. So the Gemara says for the year that he was on the Teba, Noah didn't sleep. What does it mean he didn't sleep? He didn't sleep in the bed. He took probably a cat nap here and there, but he was constantly feeding, running from this cage to that cage, preparing the food. A person has fish. I used to have fish. They died in 3 days, but for the 3 days that I had them, what an upkeep, what a maintenance to take care of five fish. You're feeding them, filters, doing the... Here, Noah has to take care of the whole animal kingdom. It's a daunting task. But the Hachamim tell us that was his punishment. God was saying, Noah, your problem was that you were a bit selfish. And again, you'll forgive me for using maybe a strong terminology, because we are talking about a great man. But you weren't concerned about the generation. You didn't do... So therefore, Noah had to, so to speak, fix that flaw of character. You'll forgive me again if we can say that. So on the Teba, he had to take care of the animals, and he had to feed them, and he had to do for them, and he had to be concerned for them, because that was the whole problem. If Noah would have been a little more compassionate before he got on the Teba, maybe he could have saved the generation. The Zohar says it clearly. The Zohar calls the flood Noah's flood. Now that's a strong thing. Noah's flood, Hazid, he was the good guy. But the Zohar is saying, no, it's his flood, it's his fault. Because if he would have rose to the occasion of true leadership, he could have stopped it with prayer, with speeches, with classes, with outreach. So therefore the kapara for Noah is to go on the Teba, and now you didn't outreach to people, so now you have to outreach to animals. And maybe round two, when you come off the Teba, you'll be able to do the right thing. As a matter of fact, how do I know it's a kapara for Noah to go on the Teba, to feed all these animals and everything? Because when the flood was over and the water subsided, it doesn't say that Noah just opened the gate of the Teba and jumped off. Noah had to wait until God told them you could leave. So the rabbi says, what do you have to wait for God? It's over, the flood's over, get out, go walk. Because Noah understood that he was being punished also. And he can't leave his punishment until the kapara is totally over. So therefore, once God says, okay, Noah, you served your sentence on the Teba, maybe you became better because of it, now you can get off the Teba, now you can go. But there's another reason why Noah needed a Teba as his escape route. Hakamim tell us that the actions that a person does influences himself. What do I mean influences himself? We know if we do things 1, 2, 3, 4 times, we get into habits. And once we get into habits, so these habits are difficult to change, we get into a certain pattern. We go a step further. Our actions also influence the people that are around us. You have to know that. A person has a friend that uses certain language. So even though we would never even dream to use certain language, but if we hear the word being used over and over again, so just because of osmosis, just because we're hearing the word all day long, so that becomes part of your vocabulary. Not even wittingly, just because you're hearing it all the time. So other people's actions also are going to affect our behavior. You have to know that. That there's nothing you can do about it. You can't fight that. That's like gravity. That's a natural tendency, the way the world works. The people that you stay around with and your atmosphere are definitely going to influence you one way or another. There's no such thing. You can't put a fence up. You can't put a guard up. You can't say, I'm not going to let myself get influenced. It's automatic. It's automatic. To the good or to the bad. But I want to go even a step further. Hakamim tell us that not only does man get influenced by his own deeds, not only does man influence other people, but man's deeds also have a power to influence the creation. What does that mean? It means in a society that's corrupt, and in a society that is evil, it can even affect the nature of animals. What's the proof to this? That's unbelievable. The Gemara says one of the sins of this generation, why God decided to do away with them, was because they had sins of immorality. It was a very promiscuous generation. The Gemara says adultery was commonplace. And you'll forgive me, but even homosexuality, the Gemara says, was accepted as a value. Not only was accepted, but there was even ketubot written for this type of lifestyle. Now, again, if we say this over 500 years ago, so everybody looks at me with their mouth gazed open, so, oh, I can't believe it, but you say this in the year 2003, it's a big deal. What are you telling me? Adultery. You have adultery today also. What are you talking about? Homosexuality? We have schools in Manhattan today. What's the? Tell me the bad part. This is happening today. This is just a sign of the decadent times that we're living in. That it doesn't even shock us, such terminology. But that was the problem in the times of Noah. So the Gemara says even the animals became unfaithful. Imagine that. An animal, does a cow know what adultery is? But the cow, all of a sudden, was mating with the zebra. From where? Where does this come from? The cow knows from this time. Which man's actions are able to already influence and filter down all the way to the different lifestyles of society, all the different creations of society. There was wasn't a recent article, but an article a few years back, and maybe it was the Times or another unreliable source like that, that said that they did a study in San Francisco. They were finding that the population of pigeons was diminishing. A certain breed of pigeons, a certain species of pigeons, they couldn't realize why it was becoming extinct. And you're not going to believe the finding that they came out with, that they found out that these pigeons stopped breeding with females. The pigeons became gay pigeons. Could you imagine such a thing? I can't make such a thing up. But it's interesting where they found it, in San Francisco, which they themselves consider it the capital of the world for such a lifestyle. See, look at it affected the pigeons. It affected the pigeons. So now, the world was so infected. It's like, God forbid, a disease, a virus that's let out, so now there's contamination. Oh, the world was so corrupt, the animals, the people, the society, the air. So the only way for God to continue the world, he had to blow up the world now to like defumigate it, which means it was gone. So the only way is you have to purge it in water. It's like to disinfect the entire world. To put it under the, one of the rabbis can say the reason one of the God made a flood, it was like a mikveh. God had to purge the world in a humongous mikveh in order to bring it to its purity, in order to start the world again, to clean out all the virus, and that's why the animals had to die also, because they became perverted also, and that's why all the people. And Noah needed to put himself in an insulated environment. So God has to put him on a teva, which is free from any of the influences. It's like a hermetically sealed room where none of the outside oxygen or air or contaminants is able to come in. So that's why he needed to be on a teva, because there was no place in the world. I don't care if it was an island at the end of the world in Australia, there was no place in the world that was pure anymore. The actions of man contaminated the entire creation, where God had to put the reset button. He had to start from scratch. And we read this, and it's concern for a little apprehension or a little concern. only because we can't imagine a society being more immoral than our society. We can't imagine a more decadent and a more perverted society than ours. If God lost his patience with the world for then, so then we're really treading in a world that is quite dangerous. Although God promised that he'd never bring a flood again to the world, but the flood is only one of many unfortunate ways that God could do away. You follow current events, you see what's going on in the west of the country, where half the state, a lot of the acres, thousands of acres are being burnt and homes and things. Borei Olam has many ways in order to wake up the world in an immoral world. And what do we do as religious Jews? That we're good people, but we're living in a contaminated world. It is impossible almost for us to be... How could you remain pure? How could you remain pure? We walk in the streets, or we live in the... We hear news, we see things, we read a paper from time to time. It's a very, very difficult situation that we find ourselves in. The truth of the matter is, our community is being influenced, whether they know it or not, and reaching new lows that our grandparents and great-grandparents would never have imagined, that a community is ours with its legacy all the way back from the old country, where there's not a member of our community that cannot trace back in his ancestors that there was not a rabbi. Every community member has a rabbi somewhere, if it was not his great-great-great-great, but there's a rabbi in everybody's family. And today, such a permissive world that we're living in, where if our chief rabbis, on the high holidays, which is probably the keynote speech of a year, if the keynote speech of a year in our community, in its major synagogues, has to be on the topic of adultery, and has to be on the topic of immodesty, and I thought to myself, I said, imagine a rabbi that's coming to visit our community on Kippur and is sitting on the stage and doesn't speak English. And he sees our rabbis getting up and making a derashah, you know, the Israeli rabbi. What is the rabbi saying? You know, what could the message be? He maybe he's talking about high levels of Torah observance. Maybe he's giving them a nice explanation to one of the pesukim in the Torah. Maybe he's talking about how the men should increase their learning. Maybe he's talking about a different mitzvot that the ladies can involve themselves. What beautiful message, what elevated message is our rabbis giving the most illustrious community in the world? And imagine you tell that rabbi that the keynote speech of Kippur, he's rebuking the community about adultery. Shomu Shamayim, what a humiliation. What a shame. What a level that this has to become a topic that has to be spoken, that our rabbis have to be relegated to do such dirty work, that they have to even, these things that come from their mouth, these hachamim are pure, that they have to dirty their hands, and even hear cases. If our rabbis got up and discussed these things, what does that mean? That means they must have heard so many cases of recent that they could not control themselves. Which this is not because there's one situation or two situations. Before the summer, you heard me talk about what's taking place with this sporting event of tennis and all these instructors. And if my opinion wasn't strong then, my opinion is stronger now. This is against the Torah. This is against the halakha. For a lady to take a tennis instruction with a male instructor, it is haram if there's one, if there's two ladies in the group, if there's 10 ladies in the group, if there's 100 ladies in the group. If the instructor is a rabbi, it's asur, it's forbidden. If the instructor has a beard and is wearing a shtreimel and has peor down to the floor, it's haram for a lady to... Now, I never saw what these tennis instructors looked like, but I'm assuming that it's not like a Hasid from Williamsburg. But how many issues, how many problems have to happen? But what's more concerning to me, and the same thing goes with the exercise. Our community has become addicted to exercise. I don't say it's a bad thing. I think everything in moderation is good. We know what Harambam talks, the importance to keep a healthy body in order to have a healthy soul. We agree to that. But that our community institutions should sponsor exercise with a man giving an exercise lesson to a lady, this is in contempt of God's Torah, and you could quote me, Rabbi Eli Mansour said, it's haram, from the biggest haramim in the Torah, and let any lady in the community come and challenge me, that they can justify that a man would be permissible to give, again, even if this man has the sitkut of the Gaon Mevilna, even if this man is ordained by the chief rabbinate of Israel to give the instruction, and still I say very confidently, it's haram. Not only to the message that we're giving our children, and not only the message, what it's doing to the Shalom Bayit, but how could a lady have such a low self-esteem and such a self and such a naivete? Such a naivete. Ladies, you're on the other side. I hear what the men say. I've heard what these people talk. These people are not people with Yirat Shamayim. You think they can only keep their mind on instruction? You think they can only keep their mind on exercise? The dress of exercise and tennis is an immodest dress to begin with. Why do you give these people so much credit to allow yourself to be violated? To any extent, it's haram. And unfortunately, this is what brings floods, and this is what brings, God forbid, punishment. And Borei Olam has been very patient with our community, thank God. Compared to the rest of the world and all its problems, we always believe that we're protected. We live in a certain bubble. We live in a certain thing where no matter what happens in the world, but our community somehow always sidesteps it. You know, the major thing somehow we always escape. But when it comes a situation where now, today, when a lady comes to me and says, Rabbi, what are the rabbis going to mind their own business? What are they talking about? That this is already a new level, which it used to be, at least the ladies understood it. They understood the rabbi's words, but they said, we're not on the level yet, we can't do it, we have pressure, we have peer pressure, etc. But they understood it. Today there's a new breed of ladies in the community, and men as well, that have reached such liberalism from the colleges and from wherever they're getting it from, that now they don't even hear it. What's the matter? I don't even hear it. You don't even hear it? You can't tell me you hear it, but you're not ready to do it. Tell me you understand the concept. No, what are you talking about? What's the problem? We're mature. Rabbi, what are you? You're perverted. What do you think? Everything is that? You think everything is... So you're turning it around. These are people that are so drawn after their desires, that have become so blinded that they cannot even tell from right and wrong anymore. That's the biggest crime of our generation, that we lost the sense of right and wrong. I'm not talking about an action. We can't even process what's right and what's wrong anymore. And again, I don't have an answer to this craze. It's nothing less than a craze of indulgence, of going after hedonistic pleasures and desires. We should have no part with it. We should not be connected, because God forbid, that I don't know, I'm not a prophet, I don't know anything, and God will bless our community for the next 120 years, and we'll have health, and we'll have success, and we'll only have beracha. But who's willing to take the risk, after you read Parashat Noah, and after you read the Torah, which is the word of God, and you see what happens because of these things, who's going to take the risk to say that they could lead such a lifestyle, which again I say is in contempt of our Torah, which is anti-God? We're so careful when it comes to kashrut, and everybody's so careful about all the other mitzvot. Unfortunately, when it comes to modesty, our community is in shambles. And no rabbi yet has figured out, including myself, the proper approach to take, how to impress upon the ladies. One rabbi gets up and uses scare tactics. Nobody wants to hear scare tactics. Nobody wants to hear how much they're going to burn. I agree. I also don't want to hear how much I'm going to burn. I'm not interested. Don't scare me. Don't intimidate me. I'll come. So another rabbi gets up and tries to go from a different angle. The kavod of the lady, the honor of the lady. The Queen of England, you never saw her dressed improperly. Queen of England always has a dress on, always has stockings, always has the fine shoes, has a hat, always has a modest piece of jewelry, expensive, but modest piece of pearls on her. She has a pocketbook, always dignified. Why? Queen of England. Would we ever see the Queen of England walking through the streets of London in Chas v'Shalom, in a t-shirt, in some strapless clothes, or God forbid, never had the Queen of England, it would be on the front page. Look what happened when the princess led a promiscuous lifestyle. Why did she make so much news? Because it's Hiddush, what, a royal family that should have immodesty? We never heard of such a thing. But you see how much the society is affecting us. I don't say it started from us. Our community did not invent this new permissive lifestyle. It's the world. And you really can't blame us so much because we've been infected by society. You can't expect everybody to be like Noah. You can't everybody to be expected to live in filth and maintain his equilibrium or his equilibrium and maintain morality and maintain ethics. It's a tall order to ask. To live in a crazy world where every television show today is adulterous and every magazine is but be a Sadiq. I agree. It's a tall order. And I'm confessing that I do not have the answer yet, how to market it and how to sell it and how to approach it. The Queen of England, people like that example. I'm not the Queen of England. You are the Queen of England. You're more important than the Queen of England. Every Jewish lady is considered a princess. Every Jewish lady is considered a queen. Benot Menachim. You're God's children. Is it proper that the way God's children dress, the chosen nation, should be like the Abid in Harlem, that we shop it, we have the same exact clothes, they open up our wardrobe and their wardrobe? The only difference is ours has a label on it, theirs doesn't have a label on it, but it's the same exact style. And another rabbi tried a different approach. I'm not saying these approaches are right, but I'm at a loss to figure out, how do you sell it? I'm a salesman. No, rabbi's a salesman. He has to sell the customer, that the customer will buy it. On most of the other topics in the Torah, God has, thank God, given me wisdom. I'm zero, I'm nothing. It's all a gift from God, has given me words to communicate to people, to explain it to them in a nice way, to package it with a ribbon on top, to give it to the guy. Oh, it makes sense, I like it. But unfortunately, in the subject of modesty, hot. What's the proof? Because unfortunately the customer is not yet buying into the product yet. Somebody said our Torah specifically has its guidelines for fashion, but how arrogant is it that instead of following God's fashion design, we leave the living Torah and we opt for the fashion designers of Europe and Paris and etc. You know, these people are, I guarantee you, you'd never let these people into your homes, including myself. These are did you ever look what they look like, these people? Did you ever see them? God forbid, each one has a worse lifestyle than the next. They live the trashiest lifestyle. We wouldn't want to even shake. If you shook their hand, you'd go make Netilat Yadayim 100 times in order to clean yourself. So God has to compete with the fashion designers of the rest of the world of Hashemai. We've taken an eternal Torah and we've traded it in for sheker, for chazav, for wastefulness, for nothingness, for vanity. In any event, Rav Moshe Feinstein said it once the best. When they told him, Rabbi, you have to speak. Your word is a word, Rabbi. Rabbi Feinstein said something. The world shook when he said something. He said, yeah, that might be so, but if it's my word against the designers in Paris, they have bigger credence than me. I can't compete. This is what we're up against. And the truth of the matter is, if they would come next year, these same fashion designers, say, you have to wear a long skirt, and you have to wear... If they would come along and say, wigs are in style, every lady would put on a wig. What's nice? Why not? They said it. They did it. They're controlling us like babies. They're guiding us and telling us. They're going to tell us what to do. I'm not preaching today high levels of dress modesty. That's not my point. But at least in thinking, Before you could dress modestly, you have to think modestly. Today we have a generation that doesn't even have to think modestly anymore. Where we don't understand basic principles, not in Jewish and American life. These are, forget about Jew. We're not Jewish. American values. Even the religious Americani, they understand that this is not a proper thing to do. Mixed events like this. Trainers and instruction and all this stuff. And when the lady comes along and says, well, they couldn't find anything else to talk about. The rabbis are bored. Well, there's nothing else. And this is the biggest problem in the community. This is an answer. This is an answer. Yes, in my opinion, this is definitely one of the biggest problems in the community. If it affects Shalom Bayit, if it affects the values of our children, and it affects everybody else. I'm being affected by this behavior, because if I'm a rabbi that tries to remain pure, and I have to have people come into my office and tell me the most immodest stories about what's taking place in their life. I want to hear such stories. I don't say my ears are pure, but I have to be relegated to hear such a... So somebody once recently told me a story. I said, Rabbi, I'm very, I'm very impressed about it. Because I told you things that are, you know, very heavy items. I'm impressed at your reaction. I said, the first 6 times I heard it, I fainted. So this is, you got this, you're the 7th guy that told me the story. So already I'm numb to what happened. Don't think I didn't react. So we're putting our rabbis through embarrassment. This is the subject that have to come to the table. Ladies, like I said before the summer, it's the wrong crowd that I'm talking in front of, obviously. God bless the ladies in our community that have the time to come to the classes and things like this. And I always say it's the good people that get the brunt of the rabbi's criticism. I'm not criticizing anybody. But I'm just giving an opinion in the strongest way that I can give an opinion without losing my cool or losing my temper or getting heating about it. It's a terrible thing. Maybe one rabbi has to get up in front of our community and just break down in tears and cry for 20 minutes about Bar Minan, the state of the modesty of our community and the state of the union was taking place in different homes with the children. I was always a big advocate. I'm still a big advocate, and I've told it to the committees that the yeshivot should have dress codes, but not dress code. They should have uniforms. They must have uniforms. For not one reason, for 50 reasons, whether it's from an educational standpoint, whether it's to take the peace of mind off the parents, that they don't have to go crazy shopping, and the kids are fighting, I don't want to wear this, and I want to wear this, and I'm not going to school, and other, and then the pressure that it puts on the people that Hazato cannot afford. What are we doing? We're, my children, Baruch Hashem, lucky. To me, I wouldn't send my child to a school that does not have an enforced dress code. The easiest thing, they buy the same dress, they buy 10 of them, in the morning you get dressed. Nobody knows anything. The kids know the difference? The kids don't know the difference. They get dressed, everybody's doing it, it becomes easy. It takes off so much, and it's modest. What do you think's taking place? What do you think takes place? You don't. You forget when you were young. You forget when you were in high school. Now put our boys and girls together and put them in none with the disasters that take place. You don't know because these don't come to you. They don't come to you to ask you what we do. And I only get the leftovers after all the big rabbis get all the major league cases. So then there's, okay, listen, there's a couple extra cases that we can't get to. So they come and bring it to my table. And those cases that I hear are frightening. And it's all because of immodesty. I'm not saying in the religious world we don't have any problems and we're free. We also have these problems also because we're also living in society. But there's different levels. There's different level of problems. And therefore we have to... Somebody, I think it was Rabbi Diamond once told me, one of the restaurants in the city, it's across the street from a public school and the old public schools, and if you look on top of the placard of the building, you see one sign that says boys and the other side it says girls. Which is in the older days in the public schools, they understood that you had separate entrances. The boys would go in one side, the girls would go in another side. Public schools, they're not known to be the most ethical and the most, you know, filled with values and morals. But there was a time where even the public school system understood that separation of that at that age is not such a bad thing. But a dress code, to me, a dress code is alphabet. It's mandatory. It's mandatory. We'll say one more idea, and you'll forgive me. I'm sorry for going off on a tangent, but I think this is this is probably more important than most of the things we've said, not only from in this venue, than from downstairs in Sodash. These are the important things in life. We don't get a chance to say them as clear as I'd like to. And I'm grappling with the right approach, but Be'ezat Hashem, when we figure it out, you'll definitely be the first ones to hear it. The truth of the matter is, we'll end over here.